Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. There was no joy to be found for two of the island's political parties in the Douglas South by-election, with Libvan and the Isle of Man Green Party finishing in third and fourth, respectively. Michael Josom came within a whisker of finishing second, with Andrew Jessop behind the top three, but still with 300 votes. Claire Christian topped the poll in the end, with Paul Quine finishing narrowly in second. So what do the leaders of these parties think of this showing by their candidates? We speak to Libvan's Laurie Hooper and the Isle of Man Green Party's Andrew Langan-Newton. The Isle of Man Green Party contested a national election for the first time since it was created in 2016. During the Douglas South by-election, their candidate, Andrew Jessop, came fourth with 342 votes. Party leader Andrew Langan-Newton told me it was a good result.
Well, it is a very positive outcome for the Isle of Man Green Party and Andrew Jessop, I would say, in terms of We didn't get the candidate elected. However, we achieved a great thing for the objects of the Isle of Man Green Party in terms of 342 votes for the Green Party and Andrew Jessop, and that's 342 votes for party politics, 342 votes for a sustainable future of the Isle of Man, which is the objectives of the Isle of Man Green Party. So it was great to experience and be part of that. And also, it's important that the Isle of Man Green Party, by participating in this democratic process, we actually shaped the election. We shaped the narrative and the discourse around sustainable issues.
So do you think you encouraged other candidates to take and consider environmental issues more seriously in their campaigns?
I feel that our presence may have had that outcome, and certainly that's what was a key message that we were putting across in terms of the great issues that are facing the future of the Isle of Man now. We especially made a big focus, and the candidate Andrew Jessop did, off the climate change bill that's going to come into the party that ends the consultation today, and also the Eastern Area Plan, which has gone through a consultation inquiry last year and is now coming back to the Parliament, and the crucial issues that both of those two pieces of legislation embody for the future of the residents of Douglas South and the residents of the rest of the Isle of Man, and how the Isle of Man Green Party, by participating and highlighting those issues, we would say shaped the narrative for the rest of the election.
Are you serious about trying to get in, though? You do want to win these elections. That is the ultimate aim. You're not just trying to guide the conversation. You really want to get people into Parliament.
So the ultimate aim is the sustainable future for the Isle of Man, and the democratic process in the House of Keys is a part of that. It's also the democratic process at the local level, in the local elections that are occurring next year, and the Isle of Man Green Party, by participating in both those events and speaking in the media like we're doing today, we are shaping the discussion around the future of the Isle of Man.
Best way to do that is being in, though, isn't it?
Well, we would say, yes, having our policies adopted by the Parliament, and that might be that we shape the narrative and the policies are adopted, but clearly we're participating. We've run four elections now, two in 2018, one in 2019, and now one in 2020. We're here to put forward our policies for a lasting, sustainable change in the Isle of Man, for a sustainable future, and to give the electorate a choice in those elections about adopting our candidates.
So what did people say to you on the doorstep from feedback you've had from your candidate Andrew Jessop? I mean, was there anything you can learn about how to approach elections in local authorities next year and Keys?
Yes, well, there's plenty of things we learn, and how to organise and how to deliver our message and how to shape our message for the electorate. Just going back to a previous point you've just mentioned, it's also important to recognise that the Green Party are having a say now in our elected officials. We've got three local councillors, a commissioner in Braddon, Andrew Jessop, who was crucially involved with the first announcement of a climate emergency in the Isle of Man. We've got Douglas Borough councillors in Volcornin and Andrew Bentley, who have been fundamental in bringing sustainable change to those communities. And so we are already participating with our politicians in the Isle of Man democracy.
Was there any resistance to your ideas? And if so, what was it about?
Well, I think an important facet of democracy is people having alternative views and creating an environment where people feel safe to debate and deliberate upon those views and coming to a consensus about how different views can combine for the overall objective of the future of the Isle of Man. So, yeah, of course, we would come across people who had different views, and that's only natural.
Well, how do you approach that? Say if somebody says, oh, I don't believe in climate change, what's the Green Party's approach to that? Do you leave that conversation? Or do you try and have it?
I think with any kind of disagreement or difference of opinion, you approach it with compassion, you approach it with tolerance, you approach it with equality, recognizing that people can have different views to your own, and trying to understand what those views are and trying to express your own views, rightly or wrongly, in a means that they are they can understand that you could may have a different view, and trying to understand where your differences lie.
Now, set out your ambitions then. Local elections, as I said, next year in April, I believe, and then the Keys election in September. As many candidates as possible, working with other parties, what's it look like at the moment? I appreciate we're a way away from some of them.
I think the crucial thing for the Isle of Man Green Party is really to shape our vision for the future of the Isle of Man and present our vision to the electorate. If that's running one candidate, or if that's running 10 candidates, for example, in the general election or local election, the fact that we've got a reasoned vision that we can present and it's justified within the Isle of Man Green Party process and against the principles that we have that people can find out about the party on our website, www.greenparty.im. But really, come into the electorate, and the role of the party politics is here is crucial to that, in that we present a vision that transcends constituency boundaries but represents a vision for the entirety of the Isle of Man. And so when people come, for example, if we had five candidates running in 2021, but people can recognise this is what the Isle of Man Green Party is standing for. It's standing for a vision which is transparent to them, reasoned to them, built around principles of the party which have been agreed within the democratic process of the party, and really going, well, we can understand that. It's a unified vision, and it's not talking about the next 6 months. It's talking about an election in 10 years' time and change that's going to occur in 10 years' time and more.
Considering some of the issues, though, that you're getting to grips with, the imminent climate emergency, is there not a degree of pressure to make effective changes right now? I mean, you're talking about 10 years' time there, for example. Is the pressure not on, considering some of the science that is coming out, to have an influence at this present time?
Of course, and I would say the Isle of Man Green Party has done that already, in the sense that the starting place for making decisions about the future is understanding the realities of the status quo now. And the Isle of Man Green Party released a report that was agreed by the party members in January this year, called the First Carbon Budget of the Isle of Man. And really, that set out a view that, why are we challenging climate change? Why are we trying to introduce policies to bring about the avoidance of climate change or extreme climate change? And how are we going to do that? And really, we start from the place which climate change is being caused by the emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions, principally carbon dioxide. And if that's the case, and certain amounts of emissions are going to cause dramatic change for the Isle of Man in flooding, extreme weather events, food sustainability, then what are we going to do to approach that? The approach should be reducing those emissions to avoid those weather temperature rises. And so that's what this carbon budget did or does, which can be found on the Green Party website, greenparty.im. And really, so it's been honest about the realities now, and so that's the starting place that we would look to the Isle of Man Green Party and the Isle of Man government and the Parliament to be honest about the realities now and not set arbitrary dates.
They being honest about the realities now?
Well, no, because the date that has been proposed, and it's subject to a piece of legislation called the Climate Change Bill, which sets out a date of 2050. The Isle of Man Green Party, in its consultation response and its document, the First Carbon Budget of the Isle of Man, is going, actually, the reason why we need to take these policies is to reduce emissions to avoid these temperature rises. We need to be honest about that.
Well, 2050 is a UN-led commitment, am I right?
Based around carbon budgets, so it's making an aggregate estimate, whereas Isle of Man is a high-emitting nation of the world. So setting a date in the future and just not being honest about the emissions now and the effect that will have on that date, we need to be transparent and honest about about our emissions and how the time period we have left to take them to net zero. And the climate change bill is a great piece of legislation for doing many of the things the Isle of Man Green Party have already called for and called for in consultation responses previously. So it's great that the Isle of Man government has sought to adopt those in that draft bill. However, the crucial issue is the climate carbon budgets as well, and being honest about that, it's interesting that they've borrowed a lot from the climate change legislation in the UK, but failed to borrow the carbon budgets aspect.
We await the outcome of that consultation. Well, just bringing you back to the election, and finally, coronavirus and the pandemic, that sort of did frame a lot of the discussions. I mean, it's the economic recovery from that. A lot of candidates have been talking about that. How does that interact with Green Party ambitions? How has that changed your approach to elections and your policies? I mean, are you considering that specially within your approach, or is it being dealt with in the same way you deal with other issues?
Clearly, the issue with COVID-19, especially in the Isle of Man, situs, is a very emotive topic, which we should be led by the science. And it's great to see the Isle of Man government have been guided by a strong public health department in the Isle of Man. But however, it's very emotional as well, in the sense that families are being torn apart, in the sense that we have a great connection with the UK and Ireland and Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales. And England, and people in the Isle of Man have great family ties there, and it's going to be very difficult for that. So, and that's one aspect. The other aspect is looking at the change that we've had from COVID-19, and change that was maybe already coming, but has been dramatically sped up in how we work, how we live on our communities. And one area of that is greater localism, people working from home more and being more sited in their communities, be it Ramsey or Port Erin. And that's an interesting development that we'll be interested to follow.
The leader of the Isle of Man Green Party, Andrew Langan Newton. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The leader of Libvan says Michael Josom's campaign in the Douglas South by-election was quite an achievement, considering he was relatively unknown in Manx politics. He came within just 6 votes of gaining a seat in the House of Keys, narrowly losing out to Paul Quine. Libvan leader and the party's only MHK, Laurie Hooper, give his reflections on Michael Josom's performance to me.
For Michael to have come so close, he essentially came from almost nowhere. You know, he's a relatively unknown in Manx politics to come within 6 votes of gaining a seat in his first attempt at an election was quite an achievement, I think, actually. I think it showed that his message did resonate quite well, I think, with the people of Douglas South. I think he ran a very good campaign. But I think at the end of the day, the voters are the ones that make these choices, and it's not very often they make a mistake when it comes to electing people. You have to trust in the process, I suppose. So yeah, I think Michael did exceptionally well. I think the result shows that there's definitely a feeling down in Douglas South, at least, that there is some benefit in party politics, in being a member or being a supporter of a party, and actually having that unified voice really within the House of Keys.
Well, in Michael's campaign, what were the Libvan policies? I mean, this is what we're trying to work out. How did Libvan shine through in his campaign?
What we're trying to do as a party, rather than approach the elections from a kind of UK-style three-line whip party process, because we find actually that doesn't seem to resonate with people on the Isle of Man. People seem to like, and understandably so, the kind of independent, individually-minded candidates, and there's a lot of good reasons for that. So the way the party approached the Douglas South by-election, and hopefully is going to be approaching future elections, is by building on what we did the last time around and building on the work that me and Kate have been doing over the last few years, is to say, actually, we're a party of principle. So we collectively agree on a set of principles, and actually that's what we stand on.
So what are the principles?
So one of the principles that shone through very strongly, I think, in Michael's campaign was about the universal access to healthcare on the Isle of Man. So one of the things that he was very keen on is to make sure that our NHS remains free at the point of use, remains universally accessible, it's not means tested, essentially. That is a party principle, that actually our NHS should always be accessible to people, irrespective of your means. And so when it comes down into specific policies, how you might go about delivering that, well, that's up to the individual candidates to decide for themselves.
Does that not create an element of confusion about what Libvan stands for? Because most people are for the principles like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the other principle that maybe doesn't come through quite as strongly from perhaps other parties that, again, Michael made a very big centre point of his campaign, was about the openness and transparency of government. So one of the centre points, I think, of Liberal Venon as a party is to say that whoever is in government needs to be open and transparent and needs to govern in an honest way and be accountable for their decisions, be responsible for their decisions. I think Michael summed it up very neatly in a number of his public statements when he talked about, we've got to keep them honest. It's not quite the language he used.
Does that not sit strangely with you as one of the prominent Libvan member who's a member of government? I mean, you're in that position of influence and he's outside the tent saying, look at these bad things the government are doing.
No, and that's a fair point, actually. With our system that we have on the island, it is very difficult to build that party responsibility because you end up with, like in the UK, a government and an opposition. And that's not the way Timwood works. I mean, for a while, the party had a minister. You know, Kate was health minister for a short while. I was a backbencher, and I still am a backbencher. And at that point, things were happening in the health service that were affecting my constituents, and I managed to get Timwood's committee to investigate the health department over the handling of the endoscopy issue at the Ramsay Hospital. Now you'd think, actually, is that really the right thing to be doing? Saying, actually, one party member is actually actively campaigning to make sure that their party leader, in that instance, was being held accountable for their decisions. And that is exactly what the party stands for. It doesn't matter whether you're a party member or not a party member. If you're in there in government, it is up to you to be responsible and it's up to everyone else to hold you to account. And so that is the party's job. That is our main focus.
You don't think that breeds confusion about what you're all about?
I don't think so, because at the end of the day, it's only about applying the same standards to ourselves as we apply to everybody else. It would be massively hypocritical if we were to get into a position of influence within government and then start saying, oh, I'm not going to talk about that, I'm not going to be open, I'm not going to be transparent, and I'm not going to be accountable to the democratic process.
That leads me to a second point then. We've had an issue with Libvan candidates who become MHKs and then left the party, coupled with this sort of individual like ability to take your own policies forward against those principles. Isn't that not become a problem that you have had candidates wearing the Libvan colours and then they've suddenly said, oh, I don't want to be a member of the party anymore? I
mean, yeah, so what seems to have happened in recent years is because the party was trying to approach Manx politics with that three-line whip approach, is that we've had members who have, for whatever reason, railed against some of those policies that they may have previously signed up to, so they may have got elected, then changed their minds. That happens. And because we do have a strong culture of independent politics on the Isle of Man, obviously those members felt that they stood a pretty good chance of getting re-elected as an independent candidate, so they've decided to leave the party for whatever reason. And I think that really is what's brought me to this conclusion, that what we really need is to be that party of principle, rather than trying to tie all of our candidates down to very specific, very detailed policy level decisions, to actually say, look, we're operating within a framework here. We may not agree on absolutely everything that we want to achieve, or that how we want to get there, rather, but we do agree on the end result. We do agree on what we think we'd like to see at the end of the journey. And for me, I think that's the only real way you're going to see a party structure build on the island. I think it's the only way you're going to really see more accountable government and more accountable members of Timwald, is by allowing people to have some flexibility within the confines of the party.
Principles can be interpreted in such a wide variety of ways. Surely strict policies are the best way of assuring accountability, because you can actually see what people stand for and it's agreed.
See, and that's where I think some of the confusion, as you've said, can come in. But at the end of the day, as a party member, I'm accountable to my party membership. And so if what I'm deciding to do is too far outside the confines of those principles, actually, that's never going to get support of the party. That's not going to make it through that checklist. So there has to be some level of robustness around this, because you're right, otherwise you could just be wearing the badge and doing whatever you like.
So how does that work in practice? Does Laurie Hooper say to his party, this is what I'm going to maybe stand up and talk about and argue for in Timwald next week, what do you think? Or do you do it and then go and see what people think? I mean, how does that work?
It's a bit of both, actually. So with some stuff, it happens relatively quickly. So you can't go back and consult with your membership on everything. So generally, that was the kind of thing that me and Kate would agree between ourselves and say, look, this is the stance that I'm going to take. Where do you sit on this? You make sure that at least you're finding the same corner. And that does mean sometimes we voted differently, but actually, at least we both understood where we were coming from. With some of the bigger issues of the day that actually we all know are coming up. Obviously, you go back to your membership, you discuss that with them, you find out what the feeling of the party is, you make sure that everyone's clear on where you stand, on where they stand. And actually, what I've found over the last few years is that it's very rare that you end up in a position where you're not on the same page. And that, I think, is because, again, as members of a party, you're all really on the same page to start with. So you all know where you want to end up. You've all got a very similar mindset, a very similar ethos. And so, really, it's very unlikely that you're going to table something that says, this is what I want to do, and your party members are going to go, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. Mm. And I think it's the same, really, with any candidate, with any MHK, even if you're an independent. You put things in your manifesto, and because you're an individual, it's very difficult to drive through all of your detailed policies. And so what quite often happens is you compromise. You have to compromise. As an independent candidate, that's what you have to do. It's the only way you're going to get things done. But when you go back then to your voters at the next election, you have to be able to justify some of that. You have to be able to justify, well, I wrote this, but actually the facts on the ground maybe have changed, or the situation had changed, or I had to give something up in order to get what I wanted. So there's no difference there, really, to what I'm talking about within the party structure, except you have that extra layer then of more direct, more regular accountability, I suppose, because you have more regular engagement with your party membership than you would necessarily have with the wider base of your own constituents.
But then I'm trying to work out how that sets the party aside from any individuals, because you end up with a diluted result, as always, with consensus government anyway.
No, not at all. So what you end up with, say, for example, we managed to get enough party members into form a government, you would already know the direction of travel. You already know where their principles lie. You already know what they're going to try and achieve in terms of that overall outcome. So the first couple of months of this administration was spent putting together a programme for government. And as a voter, as a member of the public, I had no idea what that was going to look like. Absolutely none. It could have been simply a reproduction of Howard Quayle's manifesto, as he's the Chief Minister. It could have been a massive amalgamation of every single Timbrell member getting a bit in that they wanted. Or it could have been something else completely different.
So what was it in the end?
More of the latter. I think it was more of an amalgamation of everyone.
Hasn't that petered out, that programme for government?
It has. And this is part of the challenge, actually. Even before COVID, I think the programme for government was starting to lose its way a little bit. And I think that is because I think MHKs had seen what they'd put in, what they'd tried to get in, had seen what had happened, and were thinking, actually, that isn't quite what I was hoping would happen. It's not quite what I thought I was going to achieve. And so even within Timwald, I think we weren't 100% clear on what the programme for government was going to deliver for us. And that comes back to this whole point that actually when it was put together, you had no idea what the direction of travel was going to be. Whereas if that had been put together by a party grouping, for example, you'd already know that actually it's going to do certain things. It's going to push in a certain direction because you've already set out quite clearly to the voters, these are the things that we believe in as a party. And so when we put together a programme for government, you can be sure that these are the things we're going to be trying to achieve. And that is the advantage, really, of having that umbrella sit across the top of everything, is to say, this is who we are, this is the big things that we believe in, and now we're going to try and deliver that. And it might be that on some of the issues, one of our members says, actually, you know what, that doesn't quite work for my constituents. I need to take a slightly different tack, a slightly different approach. And that's absolutely fine, because I think without that flexibility, you're going to end up with a very, very rigid system that ends up not delivering for constituents, not delivering for the people of the island, and ends up being sort of a self-perpetuating, we're doing what's best for the party rather than what's best for the people. And that is not a position that I want to get us into.
But realistically, and I'm maybe being harsh here, and we're going to see a whole swathe of Lib Dem candidates ever getting elected all at once and being able to have that influence in Timwald?
Well, that's what we'd hope for. I mean, I'd like to think that actually over the years, Liberal Vanin has managed to have a degree of influence, often disproportionately to its membership within Keys. And I think that
it's never going to be to the extent to which you mentioned there as a sort of improvement on the programme for government by having six or seven members guiding it.
I actually don't see why not. I mean, the approach that
you need a lot of people in, wouldn't you?
I'm not sure. I mean, if you look at the programme for government itself, a lot of that in there was very heavily driven by a very small number of MHKs, a small number of ministers and backbenchers. And that's the reality of our government, is if you're politically strong-willed, if you know what you're trying to achieve, it's often easier to achieve it. And so when we look forward to the next election, I think what we'll be trying to do as a party is put forward credible candidates, strong candidates, not this kind of let's throw people at the wall and see exactly what sticks. And I think that's what I'd very much like to see us doing, is saying let's put forward very strong candidates who know their own mind, who know what their constituents expect of them, and then it should be easier to try and drive through some of those policies, some of those principles, and make sure they're embedded in whatever the next programme for government looks like.
Should there be a next programme for government? I mean, do you support it?
There has to be something that sets
it. How do you stop it sort of dying a death like this one did?
that comes down, I think, to better accountability again. So there's been, I think, a lack of focus on the Programme for Government by backbenchers and by some of the select committees inside Timor. We haven't been, for the most part, people haven't been saying, well, hold on, this is what you promised to deliver. This is what you've actually delivered. Why are they so far apart? Why are you so far behind? And the whole...
Is that because when the programme was created, like you said, it was enthusiastically backed by a select few rather than everybody being like, right, this is our document and this is our strategy and we've got to keep it? Referring to it.
I actually don't know.
Some people may be disinterested in it. Yeah, just saying, I'm going to crack on.
I don't know. For my part, at least, I know that I've been very heavily pushing a number of the Programme for Government actions and trying to hold departments to account. It's actually, promise you do some of these things. Where are they?
Libvan Leader, Ramsey MHK, Laurie Hooper. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this edition via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify as a podcast. But for now, Guru Mayu and goodbye.